to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
At one time or another, almost everyone has a bad day where worry, stress, anxiety, and fear get a grip on our mind and they start running and ruining the show. On days like that, wouldn't you like to have something really simple that you could do to get out of the grip of that worry or fear or anxiety? Licensed mental health counselor Diane Morris-Jones has developed just that, a system she calls Stop, Breathe, Believe. Diane Jones is my guest today here on Full Power Living as we talk about mindful living one thought at a time. Welcome to Full Power Living. We've been on the air since 2004, bringing you a wide variety of guests and programs, and we aim to enable all of us to understand and know the importance and power of our human emotions. Remember that we broadcast over blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living and emotionalpro.com and distribute through iTunes. So if you miss one show, you can find us. Diane Morris-Jones is a licensed mental health counselor, a certified Daring Way facilitator and consultant, a certified laughter yoga instructor, and has extensive training in spiritual direction and the Enneagram. She practices at Family Legacy Counseling in Des Moines, Iowa, and holds a degree in family finance from Texas Tech University and a master's degree in counseling from West Texas A&M University. Jones specializes in helping clients embrace their authenticity and encourages clients to create lives that reflect their values and passions. She supports holistic living in her approach by viewing life through emotional, physical, spiritual, financial, intellectual, and relational perspectives. So, Diane Morris-Jones, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you, Eileen. Thanks for having me today.
My pleasure. You know, Eckhart Tolle talks about our pain body. That's what he describes that as what we fall into when we get worried, anxious, jealous, or upset. And your idea is that our thoughts run amok, and then we live at their mercy. And the approach we're discussing today that you've developed is designed to stop and redirect this process. So I thought it would be a good idea for us to start with you describing what's the problem? What is it that you were trying to address when you developed your system?
Well, I mean, for myself, at the time I began to develop this, it's been developing over several years now, but I was struggling with some of my own thoughts, and I was frustrated with that. And so I bought a simple, inexpensive watch at the store and set it to go off every hour on the hour. And the purpose of that was to catch my thinking, catch my thoughts, so that I could become aware of the patterns of my thinking. And so as I did that and was working on it, and sometimes I would write them down, other times I would just mentally make a note of what my thoughts were. But one day I was at a stoplight when the watch went off, and the alarm on the watch went off, and I just thought, okay, stop, Diane. And then at that point I thought, that's a pretty good visual, the stoplight. What would be the yellow or the, you know, slow down? And I thought of breathe, because that's a way that we can actually slow down all of what's going on in our body, is to pay attention to that breath. And then the green part of the stoplight, well, what would we want to choose if we were going to go green in our thinking, let's say? What would we want to choose to think? So often, in our thinking, Eileen, it's that of concern over the past of what all's gone on, or maybe it's worry about what will be, the what ifs. And so the idea of what is it that we want to choose to believe, which is where stop, breathe, believe, the terminology of the book comes from.
That's great. The sign-off for this show is to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
And I like that.
Yeah, it's a very similar philosophy, and one that I use in my work as a therapist. You just mentioned something that I wanted you to talk more about, and that is the ability to choose our thoughts. There's a person I know who tells me it's impossible for her to choose different thoughts when she's caught in the grip of the worry that overtakes her. And your process is designed to make room for choosing new thoughts. So tell us how that works.
Right. Well, you know, so often when our thoughts maybe are running wild, and there's a chapter in the book in Titan with my writing called Swirling Funnels and Storm Shelters, because sometimes that can be what it feels like. Our thoughts are swirling and running wild. And that's where the breath part comes in, and also just that conscientious piece of saying, stop. And I actually encourage my clients to say that out loud and also to use their name. There's been some research that says that helps us and helps our brain to really connect with that. And so I will encourage clients to say, stop, Diane, and then to take that huge deep breath. And then that does give us the ability to slow down those swirling thoughts and that thinking. It can feel like there is no way out of that. And that's where sometimes with our worry we can feel paralyzed. I believe that we have the ability to choose what it is we want to think. Another analogy I use in the book is called ruts and rivers, because so often we can just be in this rut of our thinking and think that's the only way, when in reality, if we will become aware of what might be a healthier thought, then we, with practice, can reroute that river and get out of the rut and choose what direction we would like to go with our thinking.
That's really a great process. What I like about it, many years ago in the 80s, I went to the Picasso Museum in Barcelona, Spain, and I was very impressed. As I walked through the museum, it started from when he was a teenager, the art that Picasso did versus what he did at the end of his life, and you went through the whole process. And what I realized was that Picasso, when he started out, it was almost like somebody took a photograph. He had every detail and so forth, and by the time he ended, he had one stroke, and that was a woman, and another stroke going another direction, that was a horse. And I realized in viewing that and in knowing other people who were real experts in their field, that when you get really good at something, it's simple. And that's something that draws me to your process, because it's very simple and therefore masterful in my book.
Yeah, you know, there's so many things that come in threes in nature and in life, but the reality is, you know, when we are in crisis, or maybe, you know, your friend that you were referring to that feels like she can't control her thinking, that's a difficult time to try to reevaluate, oh, what am I thinking, or to come up with the 10 principles of healthy thinking or something. And so the idea is that we would begin to practice stop, breathe, believe, and then when we need it, it's there. But even for those that don't practice it, my clients will come back and say, wow, I really had kind of forgotten about that, but I ended up in a bind or a crisis, and it was so helpful that all I had to think of was stop, breathe, believe. And sometimes clients will tell me, I never even got past the breathe part. I never even got to the believe part, and it was still helpful, and that would be true because our breath is so valuable, and so often we're not paying attention to that. And so when we can pay attention to our breath, it's incredibly helpful to help our minds slow down and then choose what it is that we want to think.
And I'd like to emphasize that it's a deep diaphragmatic breath. It's you want to move your diaphragm. In yoga, it's for kids, yoga for kids, they say make a balloon with your tummy, you know. So you have to really breathe deeply, I think.
Breathe from your kind of tummy or belly area and breathe all the way up. And then ideally what I like to teach my clients is they breathe in and then try, you know, to count as they breathe in. And then as they breathe out, to try to double that. So let's say as you're breathing in, we can just even practice. If we take a deep breath in right now and count as we breathe in. And then if we say got to four, that as we breathe out, that we would try to count to eight. And so just this very, very slow breath out. Like in Pilates or yoga, they'll talk about one vertebra at a time. Well, sometimes when I'm breathing out, I just try to make it just that slow, just one vertebra at a time.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. So I note that in your book, you pretty much are equating the different steps of your stop, breathe, believe method to things that people are familiar with. For example, the stop is equated or connected with a cognitive behavioral therapy approach where you stop the thought. And the breathe is connected to mindful breath work. And the believe you connect with the power of wholehearted intention. And I think a lot of people who are listening may really relate to that, that it's not just, it is a simple technique, but it also connects into these other things that have also proven valuable to people in being in charge of themselves and their lives.
Exactly, Eileen. I certainly do not claim to have invented cognitive therapy or mindful living or any of that, but this mm-hmm. is just a practice that's been helpful for myself, my family, and then when I began to teach it to my clients, the response has been pretty overwhelming of how helpful it is because of the simplicity of it. It's interesting because it is a simple concept, but our thinking is complex. So it's certainly not simplistic if we're ever talking about our thinking or trying to redirect our thoughts, because anyone that's ever tried that knows it's not simple. It's complex, and it's also a lot of hard work and practice, which is one thing that's been fun about the stop, breathe, believe and the image of the stoplight is because I had that little simple watch that went off every hour. But even my brain somehow registered that. So I would almost kind of know, okay, it's been about an hour, I better start paying attention to my thoughts.
But when
it's stoplight, it's so random. And so I ask my clients, even as they drive away from my office, to begin to practice at a stoplight of catching yourself with what you're thinking. And the interesting thing is sometimes our thoughts are incredibly noble and we're really excited about that thought or whatever, but the other times we're almost shocked or really surprised at what it is we're thinking. And so, and part of that idea too, Eileen, is developing the practice of self-compassion, of accepting that thought that we're having as, that was a thought I had, versus, oh, bad me, I had that thought. Because that self-compassion mm-hmm. is incredibly important with within our heart and within our self-talk, the thoughts that are going on within our head. And so to recognize those thoughts are without judgment is ideal. And then it's not so paralyzing that, oh, I'm a horrible person, I thought that, but instead of, hey, I'm learning a new way to think, and this mm-hmm. will be helpful.
You know, I was listening to somebody talk about that this morning in the education field, saying that if we are trying to teach a child to do, say, a math procedure and the child doesn't get it, we don't say the child is a bad child. We say, oh, the child's not understanding the math. But in skills of living, often when the child doesn't get it, we say the child is bad or the child is problematic, rather than saying the child just has something to learn. And so I think that can't be overemphasized for children and adults, that everything, you know, if you don't have something, if you haven't got it yet, it's just something you haven't learned. It's not it's not something that you can judge yourself about, really.
Sure. Eileen, one story I tell sometimes when I'm speaking is one day my daughter and I were going to get the oil changed or something, and I had forgotten to do something, and so I didn't have a piece of paper, so she was driving and I was riding, and I left a note on my landline via my cell phone. I hung up the phone, and my daughter, Jill, said, "Mom, who are you talking to?" And I kind of giggled and said, "Oh, Jill, I didn't know you were paying attention." And she was like, "Mom, I have never heard you talk like that to anyone before. And after I had explained that I was just leaving myself a message. And that was a real aha moment for me, Eileen, that I would never talk to my friends in a rude, cruel, mean tone of voice. But apparently, from what Jill was hearing, I was not very kind to myself that I had forgotten or, you know, whatever the message was. I don't even remember the details of that message. But that was a real aha moment for me of, oh, how is it that I speak to myself?
Right. That's the whole concept of self-talk, that we often are quite harsh with ourselves. And that's part of what the believe section of your approach addresses, where if you say, I can't figure this out, there's something wrong with me, I can't get this, instead you would suggest something like, I don't know, I'm going to make a guess here, maybe you'll have something better, something like, I'm in the process of learning this and I know I'll be able to get it.
Right. And, you know, learning something new, Eileen, is tough. My husband and I started taking guitar lessons a couple of years ago, and we didn't know a thing about the guitar. But to start something new that you have not done before is hard work and takes a lot of practice. And so to give ourselves some grace and say, oh, we're so human, or yes, this is new and so this is difficult, is a great thing to tell ourselves. The other day I was late to an interview, actually, and boy, I caught myself in that moment with some not very positive self-talk towards myself of like, oh, Diane, why didn't you start earlier, or you were really pushing the button here, or whatever. I would never have said some of those things to my friends. And so that's a great way to kind of monitor our talk to ourselves is, would I say that to a friend? It's also a great way to come up with what I refer in the book to as belief statements or green statements. If I'm really struggling with something and I catch myself in the swirl of the negative or self-defeating thoughts, I can ask myself, well, what would a friend who's very supportive say to me in this situation? Mm-hmm. And most likely what they would say and what I might say to myself could be different. But the other piece of that, Eileen, is we have to believe what it is we're telling ourselves. You know, just to say, I'm an amazing person, I mean, that just doesn't make any sense if we don't truly believe that. You know, so
right.
I love encouraging clients to add the ing onto a word. For instance, maybe it's hard for me to see myself as beautiful. Well, I could have a green statement or a belief statement is as, I am learning to see myself as beautiful. Or I am beginning to embrace my beauty, along those lines. So that it is a process. It is not a one-time turnaround, oh, great, I'll never have another negative thought. I mean, that's totally unreal.
I lived as a single parent for 20 years, and I had a very wise friend I would sometimes seek help from. And I went to her one day, and I said, I feel so overwhelmed, I just don't have enough time, I don't know what to leave out. And her response was, well, first of all, leave out the statement, I don't have enough time. And put in the statement, there's enough time for everything. Well, now, I did that, but like you're saying, I couldn't believe it because I didn't see that I had enough time for everything. So I changed it, and I said, there's enough time for everything. I may not see it right now, but there is enough time for everything. And it really worked. It opened things up for me.
Right. Yeah, it's difficult to fool ourselves, you know. And so if we can come up with the thought that we believe, and it also just to get the reality that I'm learning something new or I'm beginning to try to understand this in a different way, that is healthy because that's the reality of trying to make change. Change can be difficult, but boy, is it worth it at times as well.
Yes. So I wanted to tell you, I was reading your book in preparation for the show, and my husband, as he's gotten older, he's been finding that the worry that he succumbs to actually very quickly takes a negative health toll on his body. And that creates even more problems. And so as I was reading your book this week, he was having one of these issues. He was quite concerned. And I said to him, you know, I'm reading this book, and here's the system. And I told him about stop, breathe, and believe. And I said, would you like to try it? And I just want to clarify that he's had years of these kinds of, you know, worrying about things and discussions with me that worrying is useful to him, which I'm not in agreement with. But he decided that he would try your method, and it resolved his problem entirely,
wow,
both the mental problem and the physical problem. And I just wanted to tell you how effective it was.
Wow, that's encouraging, Aline, and thank you for sharing that. But, you know, worry can be very paralyzing. And then, obviously, our bodies are just an amazing system. And there's so much in that connection, that spirit, mind, body, and how, you know, when we're worried or anxious or upset about something, sure, it can manifest itself in, you know, stomach issues or in other things that goes on within the body. And so there's no doubt that what we're feeling and what we're thinking and what we're believing, it just all goes together
and creates
quite a, you know, a different sense of energy depending on, you know, what we're thinking. So I'm so thrilled for your husband that it was worthwhile, and hopefully he'll have more stories just like that one.
Yes, I hope you'll be thrilled for both of us, because it takes pressure off of me also. And
exactly. The cool thing about Stop, Breathe, Believe is it is pretty universal in the idea of it can be taught to a child someone that's older that maybe, you know, wouldn't necessarily sit down and read a whole book or whatever. You know, one of my most elderly clients just loves this, and it's been helpful to her. My editor, Catherine, her son was so precious one day. They were out walking their dog, and he's like, hey, Mom, that stop, breathe, believe thing really works. And she's like, what? Because, I mean, it wasn't like she had ever sat down to tell him about it, but just, you know, by being around and hearing about it. He said, yeah. He said, last night I spent the night at my friend's, and he had a really scary, some kind of monster truck or something up on the shelf, and it had scared him, and he was having trouble going to sleep. And so he practiced Stop, Breathe, Believe, this little bitty boy, and it helped him to go to sleep. And so it was just so precious for her to share that story because, you know, that's the beauty of it is that it can be as simple as we need it to be, maybe to get a kid through a scary night, but also very complicated, you know, thoughts can be rerouted as well.
Great. Well, we're up to our first break. I'm talking today with Diane Morris-Jones, who's a psychotherapist, a trainer, and the author of Stop, Breathe, Believe. You're going to find out what to pie out means and how you can use the overwhelmed pie to get a handle on your personal issues when we return right here on Full Power Living. You parent your child if he or she were a foreign exchange student? As a host for an exchange student, you'd have five main jobs to do. Those are the same five jobs important in raising kids. People around the world have used this approach to raise kids who are self-directed, make great decisions, and are immune to peer pressure. Get your copy of the Exchange Student Model for Parenting, written by me, Eileen Dillon, now available on Kindle. As a 41-year marriage and family therapist, a single, married, step, adoptive, and grandmother, I've got a thing or two to tell you that's going to lighten your load as a parent and help you create incredible kids who will become amazing adults. Go to Kindle.com and download the Exchange Student Model for Parenting today. All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Next week, my guest is Omina, a woman gifted with clairvoyance and psychic ability since childhood. In everyday life, she works in the field of mental health. She also seems to have a great sense of humor, and she's going to be talking with us about the history of our soul. Her interest, as Diane's is today, is in helping people to break out of their negative patterns of thought and behavior. So we'll be looking at another approach to breaking out of the old and making ourselves available for new ways of living. And I hope you will make a point of listening to this show. It promises to be very interesting. So you can listen and call in next Thursday, September 25th at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. Well, in addition to Stop, Breathe, Believe, our guest today, Diane Jones, is author of I'm Fine, a real feelings journal. I crack up every time I hear that. That's what my stepmother used to say when she was upset. I'm fine. But
I'm
this
fine.
Is a different way. This is a different way of saying it. I'm Fine, a real healings journal. She has prompts on the left side of the journal so that you can explore specific feelings with drawings and collages and doodling. And, Diane, another way of developing mindful living is through writing out your feelings. So talk to us a little bit about that and what you've learned and included in this book.
Right. Well, Eileen, also to give your listeners a visual, the I'm Fine is printed on a black cover in white, and it's marked out in red. Because how often do we use that as a response to people? You know, how are you? Oh, I'm fine. Oh, how are the kids? Oh, they're fine. How's your husband? Oh, he's fine. How's the job? Oh, it's fine. And then as you leave, they're like, oh, it's been so great catching up with you. And you're kind of like, well, wait a minute. All I've said is I'm fine four times, and you really have no idea. And maybe the reality, Eileen, is I don't have any idea of how I'm doing and how am I internally. What's going on with my feelings? So I had assigned this as a kind of project or, you know, type thing with a lot of my clients of getting a spiral and making a journal, but rarely did that actually occur because it's a lot of work. So I ended up making one so that my clients could benefit from it. But the interesting thing is I, too, have benefited from the journal. The idea is sometimes we can be upset. We can be angry. Or maybe we can be sad, or maybe we can be frustrated. But the reality is there are a lot of feelings that we never explore within ourselves. Maybe it's that we're humiliated. Maybe we're feeling guilty. Maybe we're embarrassed. Maybe we're feeling bewildered or confused. Or even the other, you know, joy or cheerful or excited or beautiful or aware. And so there's so many feeling words. In the first of the book, there's like 72, and then at the back, there were just way too many to keep going, and so I added in another, you know, 200 and something feeling words at the back. But for me, it's really helped to be able to draw what I'm feeling in addition to writing that. And sometimes it's just difficult to even know. And, you know, kind of like your friend was talking about when earlier in the interview that she couldn't get hold of her thoughts. Well, sometimes we can't get a hold of our feelings as well, and we just really don't understand what's going on. And so the purpose of the journal is to take time to slow down, somewhat the same practice of Stop, Breathe, Believe, but to really be aware of what is it I'm feeling right now and to give some time and space to that. And because when we can understand what's going on inside, we can learn from that. Not only do our minds and our bodies teach us a lot about what's going on, but so do our emotions. You know, why did that comment upset me so much from a friend? You know, what did that tackle or upset? Or maybe, and sometimes when I draw about the feelings, I get so much more wisdom than if I'm just simply writing about that. I think there's just a piece of that creative piece within us that's deep in our heart that when we can actually draw, and believe me, I'm not a great artist. I do stick figures and arrows and, you know, but that's good enough because it's what's going on within me.
Well, I would just add, you know, I've been a psychotherapist for 42 years And often, and you probably run into this too, people will come and they have no idea of what they feel. Talk about not knowing specific feelings. They just don't, you know, they report they don't feel. And so I've used a technique very similar to yours, which is to get that, timing thing. Like every hour, stop and ask yourself what you're feeling. And if you, if you can't get a feeling, then ask yourself whether you feel positive, negative, or neutral. And starting there, and then using something like you have in the back of your book, Stop, Breathe, and Believe, you have this wonderful list of emotions that you just referred to. Using something like that, you could go and pick one out and say, okay, this is what I'm feeling. But overall, what I found is that people wake up their feelings. The principle is that what you pay attention to, you tend to become. So it's, the more you pay attention to these feelings, the more you can apprehend them. Do you find that also?
Yes, and that's what I write about in the chapter, Fully Alive, is about living the questions. You know, when is it that you feel most fully alive? And what does that look like for yourself? And the reality is it's going to be unique and special and different for all of us. For someone, it might be to go for a walk in the woods. For someone else, it might be shopping at the mall. You know, and so it's just so, such a wide array of what provokes or prompts or triggers a particular feeling, and then also what's our desire of how can we be most fully alive and be most authentic and live a life that's full and rich and wholehearted?
Well, I love some of the tools that you have also. For example, when life gets uncomfortably complicated or stressful, you have this thing you call the overwhelmed pie, and part of the process is to pie things out. Would you explain that just a little bit so our listeners understand what we're talking about here?
Sure. Well, often that's a common concern, regardless. If it's a single mom, a busy executive, a teacher at the first of school, or maybe the end of school in meiotic time. But the comment is often, I feel so overwhelmed, which there again, that can be a paralyzing feeling. I've got so much, or even from a time perspective. And so what we talk about with the overwhelmed pie is, if I were to know, Eileen, for instance, that you love apple pie, and I brought a whole pie to you and said, here, Eileen, so glad you like apple pie. Let's pretend I'm a great cook and I made you one. And eat it. Here's a fork. And you would probably say, well, wait, where's the plate? Or, you know, I'll take a piece. And I'll be like, oh, no, eat the whole thing. Well, that's kind of gross. I mean, that you would eat the whole pie. And it probably you wouldn't even like apple pie after that, because you probably would have thrown up or something after eating the whole pie. And so the reality is sometimes we take life like that. We try to eat the whole pie at one time. And so the concept of overwhelmed pie is whatever it is that feels overwhelming is to take that and break it down into slices just like you would a pie. And often I have my clients just label, you know, so life seems stressful right now. Well, let's talk about your life. What is stressful? And what are the pieces of your life and the pieces of the pie that seem stressful? And let's say it is a college student or whatever, and maybe they've got all these things, you know, they're worried about their weight, they're worried about finals, they're concerned about their finances, maybe there's a relationship issue with a boyfriend, da-da-da-da-da. So you can, you know, break out all those worries or overwhelmed feelings into a pie into different pieces. And then the reality is, let's say they were concerned about finals, well, you simply would take that piece of pie and then draw another little circle and say, hey, let's divide the finals piece into another pie and figure out how can we kind of break this down into manageable pieces, or if you're still referring to the pie, bites, if you would. And then to come back to our thinking, instead of saying, I've got to conquer all of this today, or this moment to say, what is it that I can do right now that would move me forward and where I could feel some sense of competency and some sense of control?
Yeah, it's really nice. It reminded me of the drilling down that people advocate you do when you're researching on the internet. You're drilling down to find what's really bothering you and also what are some of the accomplishable changes that you can make at a particular time. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
So when you pie out, that's when you draw the additional pie and when you're looking deeper and drilling down.
Right. Actually, one of my client's children came out with that, came up with that because she was like, she was always like, okay, kids, we're going to draw a pie. And so one day her child came in and said, Mom, we have to pie this out. I just don't know what to do. And so they actually invented that term, which I thought was great. So there's a mom with, I don't know if she had four or five kids, but you can imagine, you know, a home lifestyle with all the schedules of soccer and school and meals and all that a mom has to kind of organize. But they pied out things quite often. It was great.
Now, you being a certified Daring Way facilitator and consultant, that's connected with the work that Brené, I'm not saying her name. Would you say it for me, please? Brené Brown, right?
Yes. Yes, Dr. Brené Brown.
So you've studied with her, and you know, I think shame is a lot more powerful in people's lives than they're generally aware of. So I wanted to ask you to talk with us a little bit about shame, and then I'd like you to show us how you could work with shame using the stop, breathe, believe approach. So tell us first about shame. What is it, and why is it difficult for us?
Right. Well, the training that I've done with Dr. Brené Brown, who is a shame researcher at the University of Houston, and she also has written a best-selling book called Daring Greatly, and then her TED Talks on shame and vulnerability are just kind of off the charts. But the way is the system that she teaches. And what it is, it's a very highly experiential methodology that's based on her research. And what it focuses on is developing shame resilience skills and then also developing a courage practice that transforms the way we parent, the way we live, the way we love, and the way we lead. And the idea is, and you're right, shame is incredibly powerful, and it can be very paralyzing in itself. In my writing, I write under the chapter Chutes and Ladders because sometimes it feels like that. And so often shame is if we can identify the area where we feel like we're not enough or maybe too much. So maybe I might feel like I'm not beautiful enough or I'm not smart enough or I'm not wealthy enough or I'm not whatever enough. Or it may be the flip of that and say I'm too much, like I'm, you know, maybe I am I stress so hard that maybe people perceive me as a helicopter parent, you know, or, you know, I'm too talkative, or my house is too neat, or whatever. I used to think when we were you know, would have people over that everything had to be done perfectly before they got there. One of my friends was like, Diane, that's not helping people feel comfortable. You need to at least leave the limes or lemons or something for them to cut up when they get there so that they don't think you're just all so perfect on this entertaining thing. And it's funny because then when I could look at that and think of, well, what is my unwanted identity and wanting to have everything so perfect when everyone shows up is I want my entertaining to appear or hospitality to appear like it was effortless. My husband used to tell people after we'd have people over, oh, she worked so hard on that. And I'd be like, oh, don't tell them that. And I realized I wanted people to think it was effortless to have people over for a dinner party. I was like, realized later, that's kind of silly because it does take a lot of work, but it's worth it in my opinion. But that idea of shame is it can be so deep and can cut so so deeply. And so the idea of becoming aware of shame and what does that look like and how can we become resilient to shame, because we're not going to eliminate shame out of our life. And we all may feel shame about different things. Sometimes people think they have to have really done something horrible or bad to feel shame over, and that's just not true. I share in my writing the story about my mom. We were cleaning out their garage, and I just threw away a bunch of her old calendars, which she was sitting there right there with me, but I just was like, oh, Mom, no one's ever going to need these. And I tossed them, and later as I was driving back from Texas to Des Moines, I felt so bad about that. And really, it came into a whole full force torrential of shame of, oh, I'm so, I should have been more considerate. I'm so unthoughtful. I'm a horrible daughter is what it ended up being, which was ridiculous. I mean, Aline, I was there for a week to help out with my parents and to love on them. So it's just amazing how deeply shame can cut and how then paralyzing it is and can just make us where we don't respond in a very kind way. We might react instead of respond.
Mm-hmm. Now, as I've worked with shame in myself, I have concluded that shame says that I believe there's something wrong with me. And everything you're talking about is saying there's really nothing wrong with anybody. We may all have things to learn. We all may make mistakes. But the thing we want to remember is that there isn't a lot of stuff wrong with us. We're just human beings going through life.
Humanity. I love Kristen Ness writing on self-compassion and self-kindness, and she talks about the idea of self-compassion, but also that of common humanity of, yeah, I goofed up, and I'm probably going to goof up some more. But with shame, we do take it to I'm a bad person, versus I did something bad. And that's a real clarifying differential.
So let's say that I did throw my mother's calendars away, and I'm dry, and I said fairly thoughtlessly, "Oh, nobody needs those," even though they were precious to her. And let's say I'm driving back to Des Moines, and how would I use then stop, breathe, believe in order to get myself out of shame?
Right. That's a great question, Aline. So that's exactly what happened to me. It's a 14-hour drive from Texas to Des Moines. And so the more I thought about it, and then when I got to the part where my thought was, I'm a horrible daughter, I recognized, whoa, my thinking is way out of control. Because I know I'm not a horrible daughter. I may not be the perfect daughter, but I'm not a horrible daughter. But yet that was my thought. And so I said to myself, stop, Diane. I took a deep breath, and I said, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but you were trying to help, or your emphasis was on getting the garage clean. You were not thinking about saying the most kind comment or whatever. Sometimes we can just, as a therapist, you can think, oh, I should have known better. I should have known how to respond to that because I'm a therapist. Well, guess what? As you know, Aline, therapists are rather human, and we don't always say everything just perfectly, do we?
I do. I don't know what your problem is.
You don't know what my problem is, huh?
No, that's totally true. That was my thought as you were talking just now. It's like, I'm a therapist. I should have known better. And
exactly.
we don't. We're human. Yes, good point.
Right.
And so what? So then, how do you come up with the believe statements? But if it might be. I think that the hardest thing, as I work with people. And they're in their ruts, and they want to move to something different, they tend to feel almost like it's impossible to get a proper statement that can get them out of the hole. But what I got out of your book is it doesn't have to be earth-shaking statement. It can be, you know, I'm paying attention to doing this differently. It can be simple. How do you go about constructing those?
Well, actually, Aline, I think you have made a great point, and that's what I often stress with my clients. Let's kind of try to come up with, in five words or less, something that you would believe, A, B, that you can remember, and then that it's true for you, that matches up with who that most authentic piece of you is. And I recall now one of the green statements or belief statements that I came up with in that issue with my mom before I threw away our calendars was tenderness over tasks. Because, well, I was very task-oriented that day. Boy, we were just plowing through, and I was determined to get that garage clean by, you know, by 5 o'clock or whatever time it was. And yet, the reality is my value with my parents and in relationships is tenderness. I want to be tender with others. And so that was then my green statement, you know, all right, mentally, next time I'm helping my mom and dad clean things out, that's going to be something I'm going to remember. We may not get it all clean today, but tenderness over task.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in answer to your question, brief statements are great. I also think that sometimes to add in the ing, like we talked about earlier, I am becoming something. I'm learning to learn it. I'm learning a new way to think about this.
I got it. As great a daughter as I am, I'm becoming even more sensitive with my parents. How's that?
That's a great one. Exactly. But the idea is just what can we believe? When I was early on teaching this with my clients about 6 years ago, one of my clients came in and she was a divorce, going through a horrible divorce situation. She had, I can't remember, it was 3 or 4 kids. But boy, she was just, and I just said, oh, I said, this is what I taught at church. I want you to say to yourself, I'm a strong, independent young woman. And she just looked at me and she was like, I can't. I can't say that. And immediately it dawned on me, of course you can't say that because you don't believe that. And so I immediately kind of self-corrected. And then I said, how about if you were to say, I am becoming a strong, independent young woman? And she looked at me a little hesitant, but accepting, and said, I'll try. And then, Aline, it was so amazing. A couple of years later, she came in one day, and she was just giddy. And I was like, what's going on? And she said, guess what? I am. And I was thinking, I don't know what you're talking about. So I'm flipping through my notes from last week's session or the week before to try to figure out what did we talk about that all of a sudden she's saying, I am. And I finally couldn't figure it out. And I said, what are you referring to? And she said, Diane, she said, I am a strong, independent young woman. And it was just simply a touching moment for me as a therapist, but it was such a proud moment for her because she'd been working on this as a process and as a way to see herself. And then she got to this point where she truthfully saw herself as a strong, independent young woman, as she should have in the sense that she was. And, of course, in my eyes, she was from the beginning. But it's really about what is it that we're telling ourselves? What are we believing ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I encourage clients to do is just to possibly find a friend or someone that they know is kind of in their court and that's supportive of them if they're struggling with a particular area. Maybe it's a weight issue or something they're worried about or something that's happened in their past and they're needing to reframe or come up with a different way to look at that, that they would ask a friend that they trust, you know, to sit with them and maybe come up with some ideas of what would be some green statements or belief statements that they could incorporate into their thinking.
Mm-hmm. So that would be really helpful. So let me clarify one thing. We're talking a lot about therapy. It's possible that someone listening to the show is already in therapy. It's my thought here that your stop, breathe, believe methodology can be used in addition to practically any other therapy that anybody is doing. Would you say that so?
I'm not big on making absolutes like any, but I'm sure
you
can.
Almost.
Okay, almost. I really think that stop, breathe, believe is very universal. Is the word that keeps coming up when other therapists learn about this, because regardless of what type of therapy they're doing, there, you know, it seems that there would be times that you would want to be thinking about, well, what is it that I'm thinking about, and how is it affecting, you know, how I feel and what, you know, my behaviors. A perfect example is in relationships of how we respond with one another. And so if my husband Roger and I, for instance, are having an argument, or I'm just not seeing his view or perspective of things, or maybe he's not seeing my view or perspective, if I can just in a short period of time say to myself, stop, and then take that deep breath, and then slow down long enough to try to understand what is it he's thinking, and maybe I'm trying to understand your way of thinking, for instance, could be my belief statement. Well, there's a lot more likelihood that I'm going to respond in a loving, caring, compassionate way than if I'm simply reacting in a very defensive posture. And so it's also incredibly helpful in relationships like, you know, whatever relationships, employee-employer, you know, parents with children, whatever. So, and then also with therapists and clients, I certainly think that stop, breathe, believe could be incorporated into most every, could we say that, Aline, type of therapy, because it does so much embrace the holistic and the wholehearted piece of living, our mind, body, and spirit. So,
great. Thank you for clarifying that. So we're up to our second break. I'm talking with licensed mental health counselor and certified Daring Way facilitator consultant, Diane Morris-Jones. We're talking about her simple yet very powerful method that she's developed to slow life down and allow us to live more mindfully one thought at a time using our ability to choose thoughts. We're going to look at more of the challenges and benefits of being the same on the outside as we are on the inside when we return here on Full Power Living. Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us, four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free emotional mastery teleseminar. Diane Morris-Jones, author of Stop, Breathe, Believe, is my guest today. You can use her simple, very powerful approach to end those unwanted thoughts, your negative self-talk, and your anxiety-causing behaviors. So, Diane, let me just follow this down for a minute. The experiences we've had in life have helped us formulate beliefs. We also inherit some beliefs from those who raise us and from our culture. Beliefs, in turn, in my learning, direct our lives, and they become the filters through which we look at a situation or a person or experience. And so we then have these filters, and we begin to create stories about what is going on. And as I'm understanding, part of what you're writing about is that if we want to have a different type of life, we need to change the stories that we tell ourselves. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and I think, Eileen, you know, a basic part of that is just even being aware of what is the story I'm telling myself. I mentioned in my writing about the feedback format that the idea of that is that we take time to even pay attention to what is it that we, what is the story we're telling ourselves about a certain situation. And the feedback format was developed by Pia Melody, and it's amazing. Four parts: when you just think of the event that is disturbing you, the second is you ask yourself, what is the story I'm telling myself? The third part is, what am I feeling? I'm feeling, which obviously the feelings journal, the I'm Fine, a real feelings journal, is a great tool for that piece. And then the ability to say, what I need from you is. And so all of that can occur in our thinking in just a short period of time. But when we can recognize and become aware and mindful of what is the story that's going on in our heads related to a certain incident, it's extremely, extremely powerful.
Mm. So that that four-step process is also in your book. I wanted to mention that. But this particular issue is the crux of a lot of problems in intimate relationships, where we get upset with the other person because they don't hear us, or they're not meeting our needs, or they're not responding the way we want them to. And one of the things you point out in your book is that oftentimes we don't even know what we want ourselves, but we're upset with the other person for not giving it to us.
Exactly.
How does your system work with that?
Well, I think, you know, when we can become aware of what it is that we're thinking and what we're feeling, we can also become, unmask and mind a huge piece of even self-understanding. And so in intimacy, so often it's about that connection. And, you know, are we connecting, or are we feeling like we're connected? And so often not. It's maybe because of busyness or overextended schedules or, you know, a bunch of different reasons possibly, but we can slow down and become aware of what is it that we're even wanting in an intimate relationship. And that does not even have to be a sexual relationship with a partner, but just an intimate relationship with a friend, with a child or a sibling. We desire intimacy. We desire connection with other people. We are hardwired for connection, and they have proven that in our brain. And so the value of recognizing how can we respond to others in a kind and loving way is very, very important. But so often that begins with us, Eileen. How am I responding and loving and caring for myself? And that is self-compassion. And when we can begin to be aware of the stories that we're telling ourselves through our self-talk, and then we are so much more likely to be loving to ourselves when we can be aware of what is it that's going on.
I remember discovering something like that. I had a disagreement with my husband one time, and I took a break from our discussion, our heated discussion, and I was muttering to myself, he doesn't know who I am. And it suddenly occurred to me that the crux of the problem was that I didn't know who I was. You know, I wasn't letting him know who I was. I wasn't being my full self, and yet I was expecting him to see all of me. And what a revelatory thing that is, to see that often you're upset with the other person for the very thing you're doing yourself.
Exactly. And the value of being heard and feeling heard is so incredible to who we are, and it just affirms that our worthiness. And, you know, we are worthy as individuals. I think you had mentioned earlier that, you know, there's nothing wrong with any of us, but the reality is we are worthy. And so to develop that sense of worthiness for ourselves is incredibly important.
Mm-hmm. I want to mention here, I'm simultaneously here browsing your website, and those of you who are interested in getting your own copy of Stop, Breathe, Believe, and if you want the I'm Fine book, the Feelings Journal, go to DianeMorrisJones.com. That's DianeMorris Jones, J-O-N-E-S, DianeMorrisJones.com. And you have a link there that it can be bought on Amazon. Both of these books are available on Amazon. So, and lots of other interesting things. And I love the colors of the artwork.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's really nice.
I also write a blog on my website, and I would love for anyone to connect with me on that. I call it Beauty and Brokenness because I think there's such a connection between the beauty that occurs when we're experiencing brokenness, and I think that goes along kind of a dichotomy it feels like at times, but it's part of our life, the experience of joy and sorrow and laughter and weeping all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. But you remind me that you have a chapter in your book where you talk about our concern with appearance and how you use Stop, Breathe, Believe in working with people. I once realized, Diane, that there's one area of the body that hardly anybody, male or female, is satisfied with, and that's the chest.
Mm-hmm.
Women are all concerned about their breasts, and men want, you know, their pecs and their manliness and so forth. And but we grow up in this culture not being happy about how we look, or maybe too focused on how we look, and you can use Stop, Breathe, Believe to work with that, can't you?
Oh, very much so. So what we're referring to is our self-image, but you know, no surprise, Eileen, that that's a struggle for us. We're so quick to judge sometimes others, even ourselves, but also there's this $1 trillion industry that helps us with that. So we can feel really good about ourselves and then look on a magazine cover or whatever and determine, oh, whoa, we're not way skinny enough or whatever, and we may not look like that in our bikini, or, you know, from a male perspective, we may not have the six-pack quite like that, you know. Uh-huh. And so there's no wonder. I love the quote that says, comparison is the seed of discontentment.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, sometimes I wish mirrors were never invented, although I think there's a lot of beauty in a mirror, and to be able to sit in front of a mirror and to begin to see yourself as you are and to love yourself as you are. But the idea of comparing ourselves with others is really a little bit of a trap, but yet we all do it. Or maybe we try to compare our 50-year-old body with when we were 20, and it's probably not going to be quite the same. there's things that start sagging and changing after, you know, a period of years. I love one of my green statements is, these wrinkles are simply places where smiles have been. And I don't know.
Nice.
I don't know who first said that, but I just love that. So that's also a great way. You were asking how to come up with green statements. Or believe statements. If someone is, they use scripture and that's a part of how they gain strength from a spiritual perspective, then scripture uh-huh. is totally full of green statements. Another way is quotes. I love quotes. And so you can find, I mean, just like that one, wrinkles are simply places smiles have been. What a great way to look at life through a sense of gratitude And, you know, so that's a great way to come up with green statements if you don't have a friend along that can help you come up with them.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. We are close to running out of time here, and I want to make sure. Some years ago, I made the decision to be the same person everywhere I went, and so I was interested in reading your book. You talk about being the same inside as you are outside. What's important about that from your perspective?
Well, I think that all of us at times are likely to put on the mask of appearance, whether it's I want to appear smart enough. I had coffee this morning with a professor, and, you know, it's just I want to be published enough. I want to be smart enough so I can get tenure, whatever it might be. Maybe it's that I want to be beautiful enough or successful enough, or, you know, what is it that we're measuring by? And then those are the things that we, you know, maybe, you know, put on this mask. And reality is we all want to belong. We all want to be a part of. We all want to connect with others. And, you know, so often it's that fear that if you could see the real me, if you knew what was really going on within me, then there's that fear that maybe you would reject or not want to be friends with me. But what I've learned, Eileen, is the reality is if I can have enough courage to be open and real and authentic with you, then that gives you the opportunity and maybe the courage and privilege of being real and authentic and open with me. So let's say we're friends and we're having a cup of coffee or whatever, that if I can be open with you, then most likely it gives you courage to be open with me. I'm also, Eileen, a huge fan of the idea that we don't share those intimate or deep parts of ourselves with just anyone. I think It's incredibly important that we're aware of and paying attention to who we're sharing our story with, and that be a person that is safe and maybe that's kind of earned the right to hear our story is important as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
But authenticity of that being the same on the inside and the outside, it's hard work. It takes practice, and it's a little bit like an everyday, every hour decision because there, again, that appearance of the temptation to want to appear to be something to someone else. But it's a lot more freeing, certainly, to be able to be real and authentic.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot like the issue of telling a lie. You know, it's so much more work to tell lies because you have to remember what you said.
And exactly.
If you're authentic, when you're authentic, you just are who you are, and you don't have to remember who you were last time you were with that person. It's a lot easier, I think.
Right.
On that level, it gets easier over time. Well, Diane, we need to stop now. I love this approach to working with potentially overwhelming issues. It's so simple and straightforward, and it really works, as I know, because it worked in my home this week.
Yeah, that's great. I'm so thrilled to hear that, Eileen. That's
right.
My husband. So, he's so cute. My husband's so supportive of this, and that's what his tagline is, and it works.
And it works, right. So I want to remind people that the name of your book is Stop, Breathe, Believe, and your website is DianeMorrisJones.com. That's DianeMorrisJones, DianeMorrisJones.com. So I'm glad that you thought to share with others this process that you've developed initially for yourself and then with the people you work with. And you shared it in your book, Stop, Breathe, Believe. And I want to thank you for bringing it to the world and also for being with me here on Full Power Living today, Diane.
Thank you, Eileen. I've loved getting to visit with you, and thank you for having me.
Great. It's my pleasure. So next week, join me for my discussion with clairvoyant and psychic Omena, O-M-E-N-A, about the history of our soul and how knowing it helps us to open ourselves to living a fuller life. That's next Thursday, September 25th, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, which is noon Eastern. Please, don't miss it. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer. You have my undying gratitude, Paul, for the years of wonderful support. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
Power Living with Eileen Dillon.